Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Esquire Coaching Radio, where we help attorneys achieve unparalleled personal and professional success. And now here's your host, Ann Jenrette Thomas.
Hello, hello everyone. Welcome to the Esquire Coaching Radio Show. It's such a pleasure to be here with all of you today. As you know, Esquire Coaching is a national coaching and consulting firm that's dedicated to empowering lawyers to happily succeed in the business of law. To that end, we discuss the full range of topics, from building business to getting a job to work-life balance and everything in between. Today we have a very special guest who's going to talk to us about effectively and ethically implementing technology in your practice. In today's episode, Nehal Madani, a lawyer, programmer, and now the CEO of Plain Legal, will discuss how lawyers can effectively and ethically use technology in their practice. Plain Legal software is used to streamline thousands of cases today, and he will address how technology can streamline work, improve your practice, eliminate risk, and establish trust with clients. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Nehal. Nehal is not only the founder and CEO of Plain Legal, whose software automates administrative and repetitive work for lawyers, which is starting primarily in IP law. But before starting Plain Legal, Nehal practiced at Kirkland & Ellis LLP, where he advised investors and multi-billion dollar companies in Chapter 11 cases. Nehal has a JD from the University of Pennsylvania Law School, a certificate in business and public policy from the Wharton School of Business, and a BA from Northwestern University. Welcome, Nehal.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure, it's really great because I love seeing lawyers take inspiration and find new technological advances to help the entire field. So I think what you're doing is amazing, and I'm really excited to have you as a guest.
Thank you.
So before we begin, I just want to remind our listeners that there will be time at the end of this show for you to ask Nehal questions directly. You'll have to call 47-838-8719 and press 1 to get in the line. That's 347-838-8719 and press 1 to get in the line. And I'll repeat that later on in the show. All right, Nehal. So let's dive right in. As a lawyer, what led you to start your own legal tech business?
Sure. So I had actually started my first business when I was in college and going into law school. And that was essentially a marketplace where college students could buy and sell physical items. So I was always interested in the entrepreneurial side. And I graduated, though, in 2009. So the economy wasn't really the best at the time. So it didn't make sense for me to start a new business. So I ended up practicing at Kirkland & Ellis in New York in their restructuring department, which, as you probably know, in 2009 was quite active. And what I realized when I was there is that I had a lot of resources. I had paralegals, I had assistants, I had a document service that would turn around documents. If anything needed to be reformatted in the middle of the night, there was a team that would help me out. So I could really just focus on the practice of law. But when I left in 2013 and started working with and alongside solo practitioners and small law firms, what I realized is that the practice of law was quite different for them. They end up doing a fair amount of administrative work themselves. So in a single transaction, an attorney who's the partner at a small law firm could be the assistant, the paralegal, the junior lawyer, and the senior partner on the transaction. And so when I started looking at that, you start seeing that a lot of that time is spent on administrative work and repetitive work. And so that's why we started the version of Plain Legal you see today, is to really streamline the practice of law so attorneys can just focus on the substance.
Oh, it's so brilliant. And, you know, we coach a lot of solo practitioners, and this is one of the top complaints. You really hit the nail on the head that there's just too much time being spent on administrative tasks or things that you really can't bill and do nothing to build the business. So being able to have technology as a resource to streamline these repetitive tasks, it just makes a lot of sense. So talk to us about your software. How does it actually help the lawyers and the community and the practice groups of lawyers that you serve?
Absolutely. And so our goal was initially to identify opportunities in the legal to transaction where we could eliminate the administrative work, eliminate the repetitive work, or at least substantially streamline it. And alongside that, we wanted to find ways where we could also reduce liability and risk for attorneys. So we started with intellectual property, and what we do for IP lawyers today is we support trademarks, copyrights, and patents. And for those transactions, we help law firms collect client information through a secure and branded web form. Our software takes that information and automatically creates IP filings that the attorney simply has to review and can finalize. And once everything's filed, we've built a direct connection to the USPTO database where we're able to track the status of their cases and dynamically calculate deadlines for them. So really, they don't have to do any of the worrying around, am I going to miss a deadline? They don't have to manage it. They don't have to go into their cases once a month to see what's happening. Our software takes care of all that.
Wow. That's impressive. Do you have an established relationship with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office?
We do not have a formal relationship, but they've built a great API that we've been able to access. And so we've been using that to retrieve data from the USPTO.
Oh, that's great. Okay. And what do you say to attorneys who don't believe efficiency is in their business interest?
And it's a common question, and you know, even when I talk about the business to non-attorneys, the typical response there is, well, don't attorneys bill by the hour? And so we, of course, would disagree with the whole premise that efficiency isn't in attorneys' business interest. So what I'm starting to see more and more in the market now is that legal services are moving towards a fixed fee model. And that's particularly true, I think, for your clients as well as the smaller law firms who are just doing more and more work on a fixed fee. Their clients are expecting it. And this isn't to say that all legal services will or should be billed on a fixed fee basis, but those legal transactions where there's a high level of predictability and the uncertainty around how long it's going to take you isn't really there, those are the types of transactions that need to be billed on a fixed fee. And so what I would say to attorneys is find a way where you're selling margins and not hours. So take a trademark filing, for example. We had a customer who actually finished trademark filing from beginning to end using our software in about 15 minutes, and he charged over $500 for that trademark filing. And now that's a number that he wouldn't be able to realize on an hourly basis. There's no one that's paying him $2,000 per hour. But by eliminating the administrative, the repetitive work, and really driving towards efficiency, and particularly, again, for those fixed-fee transactions, it was really a obviously beneficial transaction for him. So that's what I would say is to attorneys, is just focus on selling margin and not hours. And then the second is you went through law school, you spent 3 years in law school, you spent years practicing. You didn't do that to do the administrative work. You didn't do that to fill out forms, to take notes in just sort of administrative fashion. So really focus on doing the things that you love, and efficiency is in your business interest in that regard as well.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, I was surprised when you said that your software can also handle patents. Explain or walk us through that process.
Absolutely. So taking a patent, for example, there's a lot of fact gathering that goes along with that. You really need to understand the client's business, the invention, what led them to it, what they looked at in developing it, and all of that is an extensive fact-gathering process that today is typically done by phone calls that are exchanged, in-person meetings, emails that go back and forth, and maybe some attorneys that I know use a Word document as a questionnaire. So they've created their own questionnaire in Word, clients fill it out, they review it, and then they transfer it to a different Word document. So what we've done is built a streamlined and almost collaborative process where the attorney will send their client an intake using our software. The client will receive an email, they'll log in, they'll submit all the information, upload the files in this platform that we've built. And once they've finish that process, what our software does, it generates a report that the attorney can use to prepare a patent. So it doesn't prepare the patent insofar as it doesn't make the claims that the attorney would need to do, but that's where we're not really replacing the attorney. We're streamlining the process that they would otherwise be taking. So you can imagine it where if they had a paralegal or a junior associate, this is the task that they would be undertaking. And so we're just automating that element of the process.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because normally when you think of patents, it's such a specialized, application. But I think you're right in just the way you explained it, that there are aspects to it that can be streamlined, and it would save the attorney who's working on the matter a lot of time and energy. So that it seems really smart.
Thank you.
Now, we talked a little bit about efficiency, and I can see that point. But talk to us about ethics. Is this, is the ability to use technology, and especially the kind of software that you're talking about, is it ethical?
It absolutely is, but it has to be done under the right circumstances. So the same duties that would apply to, say, a paper transaction or paper files have to be applied to the technology side. In addition, the ABA and even each individual state has rules governing the use of cloud computing. And most states are on board with it with certain caveats. And so it's important for attorneys, whenever they engage any sort of technological service, that they review those terms of service. How is data stored? Who has access to data? When do they have access to data? Is the site secure? Where are the data centers? What country, what states, who can even access those data centers? And how are they monitoring the service for suspicious activity? What kind of passwords do they require? Can you go onto the site and create a two-letter password or even a four-letter password? So where are they really restricting and preventing breaches of data, right? Because we all have obligations of confidentiality, and we want to make sure that our client's data is stored in the correct way, in a way that's not going to be breached. So looking at factors like that, looking at data encryption policies, is just, I think, a core element of evaluating any technological service that attorneys are going to consider. And so those are the primary ethical considerations that I would ask all attorneys to evaluate, including ones that are looking at our service.
Well, that you just made me think of a really interesting point, which is I think that most attorneys would not really be aware of how best to evaluate those terms of service and ensure that it's properly secure. Do you have any advice or checklists or, any points that you could serve to as a reference point for the attorneys who are reviewing these terms of service and so that they have a baseline of what really is secure?
Absolutely. So while this may seem like a trivial point, we like going into the nuance of how content throughout any sort of cloud-based platform is being served. So even if the term of service being served over a secure connection, so that's just a kind of minor point, but that's something we would also ask attorneys to look at. And it's really understanding essentially how data is being stored, accessed, and encrypted. So focusing on those points, reading as to who has access to data, so that's really digging into the privacy policy, understanding and asking even the service provider, where are your data centers? How are they being stored? Is it through under cloud-based service like Amazon Web Services? Do you have your own? Are you using a reliable provider? And so I would really advise attorneys to just focus on the data element of it and every question that they can think of around data. So it's data storage, data access, data security, data encryption. And by focusing on that and supplementing it with your state-specific rules around cloud computing, I think you can really stay above board with ethical obligations.
This is fantastic because I know that this is something that goes over the heads of most, especially solos. I'm just thinking about maybe it's a trust and estates attorney or someone who's practicing in family law and may not be thinking from this security perspective. And that
Absolutely.
Actually brings me to another point. With respect to your your company software, with Plain Legal Software, you know, given that there's been all of these breaches for mega corporations, you know, Home Depot, Target, with their security, et cetera, even Sony, what are you doing to ensure security with your with Plain Legal Software?
So it's a great question. And so we've used industry standard security throughout. We really try and make sure that only a few people have access to our data, any sort of data enables us to even get to the point of where they can look at anything. It's really only employees that absolutely need to know. And there's an element of the security that we take with storing our data and even access points online for the data so that it's really hard to identify where even the data is being stored. So a combination of those factors, using industry standard security, using data centers that are secure, that are in buildings that don't even look like data centers, those are the kinds of measures that we've taken to provide additional assurance to attorneys that their data will be secure.
And, you know, so I could see that you've put a lot of thought and care into this matter, and it's really vital considering the sensitive nature of the work that we do. So talk to us a little bit about the types of law firms that you're able to serve with your software.
Absolutely. So initially when we started, I think it was the segment of the market that had absolutely the greatest need for us, which are solo practitioners. These are the individual attorneys that are running the business, doing the administrative work, practicing law, trying to bring in more business. So those were the attorneys that were really drawn to our software because they had the greatest need for it. But now more and more we're serving law firms of all sizes. So today our largest law firm is around 100 lawyers. So we're moving certainly towards larger firms. We're in discussions with some of the largest law firms in the country now about using our software. So I think more and more the market is seeing a greater need for efficiency, and it doesn't matter what kind of law firm you are. So those are the sizes of law firms that we're serving. And then we have two types of law firms. There's practices that are exclusively IP, and they're using us to really streamline their entire portfolio of legal transactions. And then there's law firms that occasionally have IP matters, and they're coming to us because they prefer to use our software to streamline the process because they're just not as familiar with the filing process.
And what about ease of use? You know, that's there's many lawyers out there, whether they're solos or in a large firm, that are a little intimidated by technology. How easy is your software to use?
That's a great question, and so I'll answer that in just a moment. But when we looked at the competitive landscape when we started building Plain Legal, we saw that there were some providers that were actually charging a training fee for their software. When you look at that carefully, it doesn't sound that bad on the surface, but there's an incentive for them to actually make their software difficult to use because they're making money off the training fee. So with taking that approach, we decided that our software isn't something that anyone can use right out of the bat. We've already failed from a design perspective. So within about 40 seconds, you can sign up for Plain Legal. You'll already be customized for your law firm. And from there, it's immediately available to use, and there's no training that's been required for any of our customers so far.
Wow, that's impressive. That really takes some intuitive design to be able to structure it in such a way. So that's exciting.
Yeah. And we've also taken a little bit more of approach as well to it, where we don't necessarily add every single feature. We add the features that attorneys are going to use. And by doing so, we've been able to keep our design simple.
Oh, that makes sense. It's actually in alignment with your efficiency, your desire to be efficient. So before I ask some more questions, I want to open up the lines. Listeners, if you want to ask Nehal a question about Plain Legal or legal technology, please call in now. The number is 347-838-8719. That's 347-838-8719, and press 1 to get in the line. And while we're just monitoring the lines, I thought I'd ask you a few more questions.
Absolutely.
So what do you think is the future of legal tech in practice?
So I believe that it's going to become indispensable, and it's going to become an indispensable supplement to attorneys' practices. And in many ways, I don't see it that different from what the role of email was initially in legal practice and where it's today. Now you have this culture where everything is supposed to be easy to use. Even taking in companies like Apple, more and more attorneys now are using iPhones and Android phones, but particularly Apple phones. And so taking a device like Apple is easy to use. It does a lot for you, and I think that's what attorneys are going to be starting to expect. And so we're going to be in this place where legal tech is going to perform a lot of these tasks that typically required a lot of human resources. And you're going to get to a point, I think, over time where legal services are going to become more and more accessible, because through the help of legal tech, the cost of servicing clients is going to be reduced. And so I see it as an indispensable element of legal practice in the future, as well as one that's going to make legal services more accessible.
And I think that's so important. You know, we do a lot of work at Esquire Coaching in helping lawyers to build their marketing and business development practices, and we take a very authentic approach to it. You know, we believe that lawyers should put their clients first, you know, and provide the highest value and the highest service to clients. And I think what you're talking about is essential, because it's now in this day and age where so much is available through the internet. You know, clients are a different breed. They know a lot more about the law. They're researching before they go in, and it doesn't make sense to have this this veil and this wall that we used to have in the legal profession. So with advances in legal technology and streamlining costs, I do think it's going to make it a much more client-friendly environment. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And it's one that I think, again, is going to open up those legal services to clients that didn't have it available to them before.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. Bringing down the cost of accessing a lawyer is really important.
Right.
So what about for those lawyers who are intimidated by technology, what advice would you give to them?
And so I would certainly understand their perspective and where they're coming from, but there are these new generation of legal technology companies that are taking, I think, an approach that we've taken as well, which is that technology should be usable right away. There shouldn't be a training. There shouldn't be a barrier to entry for someone adopting it. So I would say go explore the market. See what else is out there from your legacy providers, because technology is becoming easier and easier to use. And these new generation of legal technology companies are, I think, really paving the way and causing some of the incumbents to revisit their platforms and to see how can we really make this something that's going to be fitting the needs of our customers in a way that doesn't overwhelm them.
I think that makes sense. And you do see this in terms of everything. You see it in terms of apps. You see it in terms of, you know, new software that's being designed. Everything is becoming increasingly accessible and intuitive in design. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So in essence, it becomes less intimidating if it's so intuitive.
Exactly. And I think the other element is that you have to look for technology, especially legal software, that fits your workflow today. So a lot of them are trying to reinvent your workflow and try to make you do things entirely different, and it's finding ones that you can adapt into your existing workflow as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what's next for Plain Legal?
So we get a fair amount of requests from attorneys in different practice areas asking us to adopt our software for their particular legal vertical. So as I mentioned, we've been heavily focused on IP. So next for us is to expand into other verticals and continue automating more and more processes within intellectual property.
That's wonderful. And do you have a sense of which practice area might be next on the horizon?
We're still considering a lot of options. We get a fair amount of requests from trust and estate lawyers. We get a fair amount of requests from lawyers doing business formation as well. So those are promising, and then we're exploring a few other ones and hope to launch our next practice area this coming quarter.
Oh, excellent. But please, please keep us in the loop so we could share it with our audience either
Absolutely.
On our blog or our social media. Happy to share a great resource like Plain Legal.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are almost out of time, and I wanted to just thank you for joining us today. And I want to also remind our listeners, you know, if you have any particular legal tech questions or challenges, please feel free to reach out to Nehal. Nehal, how can our listeners reach you?
So they can reach us directly on our website. There's always live chat available if they want to speak to us, and particularly most often it's directed towards me. And they can always email me at Nehal, N-E-H-A-L, so N-E-H-A-L at plainlegal.com.
Excellent, excellent. Listeners, I really encourage you to just check out his website. If you're in IP or in another practice area that could benefit from such an automated technological service, you know, definitely check out Plain Legal. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Nehal.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. So next week, in honor of Women's History Month, we will be speaking with Valerie Borek, founder of B. Borek Law Firm, who's going to be speaking to us about her very interesting practice in birthing rights law and vaccine law. So stay tuned for that. If you have any questions for this week's or next week's radio show episodes, feel free to email us at info@esquirecoaching.com. That's info@esquirecoaching.com. Until then, be well, everyone.